is News from the Center, 1450 AM WRCE and 107.7 FM W299 CD Richland Center, and always on the Civic Media app.
ABC News, I'm Sherry Preston. President Trump in Iowa last night praising Republican lawmakers for passing his new budget.
There could be no better birthday present for America than the phenomenal victory we achieved just hours ago when Congress passed the one big, beautiful bill to make America great again. Right.
The president also announcing the kickoff to events surrounding the 250th birthday of the nation that will be celebrated 1 year from today. There will be a budget bill signing in Washington later today, complete with a B-2 bomber flyover. Russia launching one of its largest drone and missile strikes of the war on Ukraine. The move coming hours after Vladimir Putin got off the phone with President Trump, who says he is very disappointed in Putin. The president saying last night that he would be talking with Ukrainian President Zelensky later today. Three people in New Jersey were killed overnight when severe thunderstorms rolled through the Northeast. This is ABC News.
As Wisconsin as a game of cribbage with good friends, this is the Civic Media Radio Network.
For WRCE 107.7, I'm Joanne Krulatz. Wisconsin Governor Tony Evers has signed a new two-year budget to secure federal Medicaid funding. The budget passed both legislative chambers in an unprecedented single day on Wednesday into early Thursday morning, driven by urgency to access $1.5 billion in federal funds for rural hospitals. The governor signed the bipartisan agreement early Thursday morning after it was approved by the state assembly.
It's critically important that people understand that we need to compromise when necessary. And I think that's a strength, not a weakness.
Though four Republicans in the GOP-controlled state Senate voted against the plan, five Democrats joined the remaining Republicans in voting in favor of it, including Senate Minority Leader Dianne Hesselbein. The governor says he's not disappointed in that level of support.
They have to do what they think is right, and everybody's kind of looking for what's going to happen in a couple years, and so I'm not surprised. But there's a whole bunch of Republicans that supported it, so God bless them all.
The $111 billion plan includes more than $1 billion in income tax cuts, increased special education funding, and subsidies for child care. It also raises hospital assessment rates to the federal maximum. Representative Tony Kurtz issued a statement after the Wisconsin State Assembly passed the 2025-27 biennial budget. He said he voted in favor of the recrafted bipartisan budget because it, quote, makes investments in many priorities for Wisconsinites, end quote. Your 4th of July forecast calls for gradually sunny skies with highs around 92. For WRCE News, I'm Joanne Krulatz.
The Brewers head to Miami. Hi, I'm Mike Clemens with sports, baseball. The Milwaukee Brewers are in Miami tonight to kick off a three-game weekend series against the Marlins. The Brewers losing last night 3-2 against the Mets. New York taking the series 2-1. David Peterson with the win. The Brewers' Jose Quintana with the loss against his former team. Manager Pat Murphy says they just couldn't get the ball to bounce the right way last night.
Why you play 162, you know, because you're going to have a game like this where, you know, home runs foul, you know, and the ground ball's just out of reach or just under your glove, and it would have been a double play, and, you know what I mean, it's a different game, but that's why you play them all, and we didn't score more runs than them, we didn't get the timely hit when we needed it, and a couple calls went against us, and it's part of it.
Some good news for the Brewers' bullpen, veteran Brandon Woodruff, now set to make his first start in nearly 2 years, Sunday in Miami against the Marlins, with sports on Mike Clemens.
As Wisconsin is dropping a line in your favorite fishing spot, this is the Civic Media Radio Network.
It is going to be mostly sunny today with a high in the upper 80s to low 90s this afternoon. It's going to be humid, too. That's going to take the heat index well into the 90s this afternoon. Tonight, partly cloudy, low 70s. Tomorrow, partly cloudy, late-day thunderstorms with a high near 90. I'm meteorologist Sean Cable. Currently, it's 69.
The Todd Allbaugh Show.
Why do we want to be proud to be an American? Why are we celebrating the United States?
Let's say that you're going to define America in political terms. I define it in terms of what the founding fathers did in 1776. An ideal that we are still trying to fully live up to. That all men, all people, I would say, are created equal. All Americans are represented by the stars and stripes. I love the 4th of July.
The Todd Allbaugh Show. Weekdays 2 to 4 on your local civic media radio station. And on the app.
Not completing high school is more of a social thing than it was an academic thing. Even though all these years have passed, I still had that longing to have my diploma.
At age 30, Carissa finished her high school diploma.
If you're even considering getting your high school diploma, you can do it.
No one gets a diploma alone. If you're thinking of finishing your high school diploma, you have help. Find free adult education classes near you at finishyourdiploma.org. That's finishyourdiploma.org. Brought to you by the Dollar General Literacy Foundation and the Ad Council.
Maggie Dawn.
Happy Independence Day. On the next show, enjoy a special best of episode. And while we're off enjoying family, friends, food, fun, and fireworks, don't miss your chance to win Brewers tickets with Free Ticket Friday.
The Maggie Dawn Show, weekdays 4 till 6. News from the Center, WRCE.
You're listening to pre-recorded content.
Live across Wisconsin on Civic Media, you're listening to Mornings with Pat Kreitlow, powered by Up North News. Now, from our Lake Wissota studio, here is the founding editor of Up North News, Pat Kreitlow.
Well, hey there, Wisconsin. Good morning. It is 6:06 on this Friday morning, July 4th, Independence Day. Another beautiful morning to have you here up north from Lake Wissota, from wherever you're spending your mornings listening across the Civic Media Radio Network. Or maybe like me, you're sleeping in and catching this later by podcast. Regardless, it's nice of you to start your day, start your holiday weekend right here. So I got a question for you. What you up to? What you doing today? My hope for the weekend is to have some fun on the lake or, depending on the weather, to be lake adjacent, as they say. I will not be the first person who has had to drive upriver to get to one of our favorite hangouts. I will go there if necessary. I'm just looking forward to some relaxation. This is not a big family gathering weekend for us this time around. And I have a new hammock, and I have really enjoyed it so far. And I really hope to get a chance to enjoy it a little bit more coming up this weekend. Hope you get a chance to do everything that you're looking to do as well. Obviously, keep it here on your favorite local civic media station for the latest weather updates, just to make sure that it doesn't rain on your parade. That's one of the places where you won't find me today, a parade. It's true. I have waited until 6 a.m. on a holiday morning to say this as a former politician. I am not a fan of parades. I never have been. I've attended them. I've brought my kids to them. I've walked them as a candidate. I rode in the back of a car for one as a TV anchor way back in the day. And I'm not sure why it is. Maybe it's just the sitting still thing. You're just sitting there waiting for the next thing and waiting for the next thing. And I would just rather be walking. I would rather be at a place where they had a static parade. So put the band here and put this group here and put that float there and put this thing over here. And at my own pace, I will walk up and down and do something to see them or to go to one of the vendors. Oh, wait, that's not a parade. That's a fair. Yes, I'm a fair guy. That's where I think I'd prefer to be. However, it seems like no matter how much I say it, when I'm in a parade, and it's been a while, but when I'm in a parade, at the time, I'm enjoying it. It's not, people are friendly. If you're passing out candy, you know, people love that. They just want to say hi and get in with the holiday. Yeah, there are a couple of goofballs and, you know, hecklers, whatever you want to call it. That's everywhere. You know, unfortunately, not everybody's mama raised them right. However, by and large, always great to be there when it's all said and done. Though I got to tell you the story of my first parade as a candidate. Okay. I had recently announced that I would be running for state Senate, and it was actually more than a couple of months afterwards, and it was now springtime. And here comes our first parade, and it's in the little community of Boyd. Boyd is right down Highway 29 here, and no doubt the shortest parade. So that was great. My first parade was my shortest parade. We had a convertible at the time, Sherry did, that she drove to work. And for those of you who don't listen regularly, Sherry is an OBGYN. And I said, you know, can you drive your car and can the girls sit in the back seat and throw out candy? And then I'm going to walk along the parade route and shake hands and things like that. Well, she wasn't crazy about the idea. I wasn't crazy about walking in a parade. You know, that's something I'd never done before. But we're going to give it a go. So we did. And by the end of it, we were both hooked, but for very different reasons. I had a very fine experience, but Sherry had a better experience, because it's one thing for a guy who was on TV and a politician now to walk the parade route. Apparently, it's another thing to see your gynecologist, because I heard so many people going, "Hi, Dr. Kreitlow. Hi, Dr. Kreitlow. How are you? Hey, Dr. Kreitlow." And they'd be holding up the baby that she delivered, you know, 6 months ago or a year ago, or pointing to their kids. And Sherry would recognize them and point to them and wave. So we get to the end of the parade and we're kind of relieved. It's all worked out well. And I've got a campaign manager that I haven't known that long. She was great. But she turns to Sherry first and says, "Did we pick the wrong Kreitlow to run for office?" Thankfully, Sherry right away said, "No, you got the right one." She has no desire to run for office, which is too bad. She'd be the far better choice, the far better politician. Just not something that's in her wheelhouse. So we've done plenty of parades, including 4th of July ones, which takes me back to the point of this holiday. Let us not forget the point of this holiday. It is our independence, our existence as a democracy with a balance of powers. No monarch, no strongman. There is a dedication and a pursuit to a truth that by now should be self-evident, that all of us are created equal and deserve equal rights under the law, equal protection under the law, equal opportunity. And again, don't get me started on equality of opportunity and how many people on the far right, you say equality of opportunity, but they hear equality of outcomes. And they say, that's socialism, this equality of outcomes. Nobody is talking about that. It's about the equality of opportunity to get that education, to be able to strive for that next goal along the way and not have somebody hold you back for all kinds of ugly reasons as we've had in this nation's history. So let's remember that we are all created equal. We do deserve equal rights and equal protection and equal opportunity. And let's continue to work toward being our better vision of a nation. The one that we never quite fully attain, but we never stop trying to get there. Okay, let's switch gears. Of course, the business of the day, since I already told you I'm not really here, I'm probably sleeping in, is a lot of the segments that we've run recently over the past couple of months that we thought were worth sharing with you again. They include explanations of how Republicans who decry red tape sure know how to use it and proved it in this federal budget bill. We'll talk about an education summer summit that's coming up for educators and their allies. We will talk about whether a city should have a city manager or a mayor based on something that happened in Wausau. And we'll visit with Jeff Mandel from Law Forward talking about suing the world's richest man and trying to keep billionaires from interfering in our elections anymore. But we'll start with a segment I recently had about the former congressman up north and what he's being known for now. And it's not just being a cabinet secretary. Here we go. The New York Times put out a feature story on Sean Duffy. And essentially, this is somebody else's phrase, but that Sean Duffy and his wife, Rachel Campos Duffy, both reality TV stars, preached the prosperity gospel of having large families, and that having many children is the key to saving America. For example, the story notes that in a 2023 episode of a Fox podcast that they co-host, Sean Duffy said, quote, "If you make the decision of a big family, I think your kids are better. I think you're better." The report says even as Duffy focuses on air traffic reforms, tackling issues exposed by the plane crash at Reagan National in January, his policies and perspectives are shaped by the conviction that women should be having more children. Early in his tenure at the Transportation Department, Mr. Duffy signed a controversial memo pledging to prioritize transportation funding for regions with higher birth rates and marriage rates, an approach that Democratic senators have called, quote, deeply frightening and disturbingly dystopian. The story goes on to say, as the Trump administration seeks to both exude macho masculinity and encourage men to settle down, some conservatives see Mr. Duffy as an important cultural figure who offers a middle way, a red-blooded American male who once scored with reality TV stars. He is now a devoted dad with his own chicken coop and beehives, publicly pledging his commitment to his wife and their old Chrysler minivan. Like Mr. Trump, who also crafted his image on reality TV, Mr. Duffy understands what will get people to turn on a show and to keep watching. And if that sounds like the overall article is going to be, let me put it this way. It is very indicative of what the rest of the article is going to be like. If you go into a piece like this already thinking about the Duffys, what you just heard in that last paragraph, this article is not going to change your mind. This is, again, somebody who, how do I put this right? Your success as a man or a family, for that matter, some people believe that your success is measured by your fertility. And honestly, that's a sad way to look at things. If you have the means to have that many children, and, you know, Sean Duffy is from a family of 11 children. He now has 9 children of his own. If you have the means to do that, then good for you. But it's a little odd hearing that from somebody who had served in Congress and to put it kindly, was part of a Republican Party that does not have a great track record of supporting young families or growing families, whether it's, you know, wages and affordable housing, good schools, WIC and other food assistance, child care, you name it. From a group of folks that, I mean, this is actually kind of new talk about having more babies. What have we typically heard? We've typically heard, oh, those families that just keep making more babies and then they want the rest of us to support them. So I think the caring and the rah-rah-ing for large families does not apply evenly across the board, if you know what I'm saying. But there he is with a very long feature about how this former bad boy of reality TV is now devout, devoted, and trying to work ways to have the make more babies thing be part of official policy. And I've heard this repeatedly from Republicans who talk about, oh, our birth rate is so low and we just got to get more people making babies. Are you so anti-immigrant? Are you so against people who aren't exactly like you that instead of embracing the immigration that made this country great in the first place, that you're just going to say to a certain segment of the population, if you all are more fertile, your country will be better off? I just think there are better ways to support all families, and we should have expected better from him in Congress, and we should expect better with him as our transportation secretary. So much more ahead coming up here from Lake Wissota on this Independence Day morning. Thank you for making this a place to spend part of your mornings here on the Civic Media Radio Network. I'm Pat Kreitlow.
This is News from the Center, WRCE.
You're listening to the American Democracy Minute, keeping your government by and for the people. Thomas Jefferson is credited with most of the text of the Declaration of Independence, but the independence part came from a Virginian named Richard Henry Lee on June 7, 1776. The First Continental Congress sent a list of grievances in 1774 to King George III, among them the loss of their rights under English law, the occupation by British forces in peacetime, and the oppressive Coercive Acts passed by Parliament to shut down colonial unrest. The King and Parliament didn't respond other than to pass more restrictive laws. By mid-May 1776, 8 colonies supported independence, including Virginia, which directed its delegates to support independence at the Second Continental Congress. Virginia delegate Richard Henry Lee on June 7th presented his resolution for independence to the Congress in Philadelphia, which tabled action until July 2nd. In the interim, Thomas Jefferson, with light editing by Benjamin Franklin and John Adams, crafted a statement which would become the Declaration of Independence, which included Richard Henry Lee's independence resolution word for word. Resolved that these united colonies are and of right ought to be free and independent states, that they are absolved from all allegiance to the British crown, and that all political connection between them and the state of Great Britain is and ought to be totally dissolved. Read the full Declaration of Independence at AmericanDemocracyMinute.org. I'm Brian Beal.
The Maggie Dawn Show.
Madam Mayor Satya Rhodes Conway from the fabulous city of Madison.
A lot of people say, I don't like politics. It's all dirty and angry and blah, blah, blah. It's really about caring about your community, finding a way to, like, bring it back to people talking to each other.
Yeah.
About what is important in our place and how do we take care of each other and use the levers of government to do that. That's really what it's about.
The award-winning Maggie Dawn Show at its new time, weekdays 4 till 6 p.m.
Is getting vaccinated on your to-do list? We can help you check that off.
You've got this.
Yes, you do. See how we've got you at yougotthis.usaging.org. A message from the Aging and Disability Vaccination Collaborative, powered by U.S. Aging.
Download the Civic Media app in the Google Play or Apple App Store and take us everywhere. This is the Civic Media Radio Network.
You're listening to pre-recorded content.
Welcome back. Before we get to a conversation about Medicaid, child care, and Republican red tape, let's do our free Ticket Friday giveaway. Yeah, we're doing that too today, even on a holiday. Use that Civic Media app for this statewide contest. Text in the keyword I'm about to give you before the end of the show at 9 o'clock, and you'll be in the running for 4 tickets to next Friday night's game versus the Washington Nationals. The keyword is holiday. H-O-L-I-D-A-Y, holiday. Text that using the Civic Media app for our free Ticket Friday Brewers Ticket giveaway. Let's continue the conversation here about childcare for a moment. And we get a follow-up text from Tim in Wales who says, thank you. I had no idea how the program works. I don't think the majority do. I think if more people knew how the program works, it would have more support. How they get the funds, how the funds can be used, how they are tracked. Do all families get the use of the funds, or is it set by income? And the short answer to that is that this is assistance for the providers. Here's an interesting way to think about it. And if we hadn't had a bit of a technical delay, I would have asked Corrine about this directly. But look at it this way. State aid goes to fund our education, our K through 12 public schools. Well, and now voucher schools to a very high price tag as well. But we pay taxes. The taxes go in part to the education of our children from kindergarten through 12th grade. And then there's also state support for technical colleges, the UW system, and more. What we're doing is evolving the system to say education doesn't start on the first day of kindergarten. If you've got quality childcare that allows parents to be in the workforce if they choose to, and you're educating those kids in a safe environment, then why wouldn't some of our tax dollars go there instead to the providers so that they can keep prices reasonable for the parents? Think of it as, you know, the parents paying the child care center is much like we pay property taxes for our part of K through 12 education. So here's where I think you can get Republicans interested in this. What if the alternative to quality child care centers was expanding public education, public schools, what conservatives like to call government schools. Well, we don't have that for child care right now. But if we did, if we started instead of K-12, it was, say, you know, birth to 12 or something like that, and you went to, you know, the local elementary school for your child care, and your state tax dollars went there, that would be one way to go, but conservatives wouldn't like that. What would they say? They'd say the private sector should do this. The marketplace should be doing this. Well, that's what we have right now. So if you don't want every, you know, public school in the child care business, then you should want the private sector. You should want these parents, these community members who want to care for our children and who aren't part of a government system, but support them with our tax dollars so that our kids are getting good quality care, safety, education from, you know, from the time they're very small until the time that they're out there in the workforce. And so simply expanding the model that says we together are going to care for our children, all of our children, and make sure that they have the best learning environment possible. That's good economic sense. So that's going to appeal to the pro-business conservatives in Republican caucuses. Now, unfortunately, there is a real divide in there. In that room, you'll have your pro-business conservatives, but you'll also have your social conservatives who will say, well, this just, you know, encourages, you know, all women, usually, to abandon their kids in childcare so that they can go work and they shouldn't be so selfish and they should stay home with the kids. Well, that's a decision that you can make. That's a mindset that you can have. But as an elected official, you know, in terms of what's good for all families in Wisconsin, what's good for the economy writ large, you're going to have to take a look at this issue and see if your social conservative policies are the kinds of things that you can impose on everybody else in the state, the kind of things you can impose on the state economy. Or do you merely state your case and say, you know, this is what we'd like to do. Let's find the things that encourage at least one parent to stay home. Okay. Now we're talking about nutrition assistance. Now we're talking about health care. Now we're talking about affordable taxes for the middle class, not just for the highest tax brackets. There are so many ways to be pro-family and fiscally conservative and even socially conservative that don't cross some kind of a line of dictating how many kids you can have or have to have. It brings us back to that Sean Duffy piece from the New York Times yesterday, is you can encourage big families if you want, but if as a government, you're not willing to provide ways that make a large family an attractive outcome for a couple, then those are just empty words that you're saying. So take our tax dollars and do the best you can with them from cradle to grave, whether it's good child care, affordable schools, or making sure you don't take away people's Medicaid when they're disabled or their Medicare when they're finally ready to retire. That's really all we want, is a well-rounded budget, both at the federal level and at the state level. And that involves much more than tax credits or red tape, you know? And the red tape one really gets to me. Because we hear that all the time. Oh, we got to get rid of the red tape for the business community. We've got to get rid of the red tape for the business community. But look what they're doing with Medicaid. How are they going to cut? They say, well, we're not cutting. We're just making sure that only eligible people get it through all these additional work requirements, all these reporting requirements. In other words, all this red tape. Similarly, they may come back and say, you know what? We're going to put a whole bunch of money into child care accounts. But we're going to put so much red tape into it, like reporting requirements and other benchmarks, that many daycare providers decide not to take advantage of it because it's not worth all the hassle. The people that tell you that they're against deregulation and red tape sure know how to use it when they want to for their own partisan purposes. Coming up next, one of our recent homeroom segments about the Summer Summit. I'm Pat Kreitlow. This is the Civic Media Radio Network.
You're listening to News from the Center, WRCE. As Wisconsin is brats on the grill for a tailgate, this is the Civic Media Radio Network.
For WRCE 107.7, I'm Joanne Krulotz. The U.S. Department of Agriculture's Food Safety and Inspection Service issued two public health alerts. The first is for ready-to-eat beef jerky stick products that may be contaminated with plastic. The beef jerky stick products were produced on May 27th and have an 18-month shelf life. The products are 6.9-ounce bags containing 6 1.15-ounce vacuum-sealed packages containing Riverbend Ranch original beef stick, and packages containing Riverbend Ranch jalapeno beef stick with a Best Buy date of 11/27/2026. The products bear EST47282 on the back of the label. The second recall is for Kraft Heinz Foods Company, which is recalling over 367,000 pounds of fully cooked turkey bacon products that may be adulterated with listeria. The turkey bacon was produced from April 24th through June 11th. The following products are subject to the Kraft Heinz Foods Company recall: 12-ounce vacuum-packed packages of Oscar Mayer Turkey Bacon Original and Universal Product Code 07187154-8601, used by dates ranging 18 July 2025 to 02 August 2025, 36-ounce packages containing 3 12-ounce vacuum-packed packages of Oscar Mayer Turkey Bacon Original and Universal Product Code 07187154-8748, used by dates ranging 23 July 2025 to 4 September 2025, and 48-ounce packages containing 4 12-ounce vacuum-packed packages of Oscar Mayer Turkey Bacon Original and UPC 07187154-8748. 8793 and used by dates ranging 18 July 2025 to 4 September 2025. I'm Joanne Krulotz.
On your entertainment beat, I'm Pete Schwabba. Big Brother Season 27 is about to drop, but there is an exciting new twist, according to the people who created said twist. Variety says three contestants from previous seasons will drop by every Friday night to analyze the sitch. Other highlights for this coming season will include a mystery hotel theme and a living room with chess guardians, whatever that means. Season 27 of Big Brother drops July 10th on CBS. In other Season 27 news, the creators of South Park are not happy about the delay in their latest season reaching viewers. Trey Parker and Matt Stone are blaming the Paramount merger with Skydance for the long wait between seasons. Season 26 finished 2 years ago. A recent update was that the new season would drop July 9, but that has been pushed back again to July 27. Just guessing, we will see Parker and Stone's frustration with the networks in a South Park episode in the near future. For more showbiz fun, tune in to Nightlight with me, Pete Schwabba, weeknights from 6 to 8 p.m. on the Civic Media Radio Network.
Download the Civic Media app in the Google Play or Apple App Store and take us everywhere. This is the Civic Media Radio Network.
It is going to be mostly sunny today with a high in the upper 80s to low 90s this afternoon. It's going to be humid, too. That's going to take the heat index well into the 90s this afternoon. Tonight, partly cloudy, low 70s. Tomorrow, partly cloudy, late day thunderstorms with a high near 90. I'm meteorologist Sean Cable. Currently, it's 69.
Nightlight with Pete Schwabba.
It's National Handshake Day, but I find the idea that you just meet someone and you're holding a body part of theirs kind of odd. Hello, stranger. I'd like to squeeze your hand. Let's have an intimate act here. I have no idea where it's been or how you choose to use your hand in your spare time, but I'd like to hold it for a while. Unless it's a friend. Look, I don't know why we have to touch each other when we barely know each other.
Nightlight with Pete Schwabba. Weeknights from 6 till 8 on your local Civic Media radio station and on the Civic Media app.
Doctors Without Borders is delivering life-saving medical care where it's needed most in communities around the world. From bandaging war-wounded patients in Sudan to providing clean drinking water in Haiti, we're in more than 70 countries worldwide, bringing patients from sick to recovering, from emergency to aid, from crisis to care. This life-saving care is made possible by a global movement of supporters like you. Thank you.
Jay Matinair and Greg Bach.
Coming up on the show, happy 4th of July. We have a specially curated Matinair on air for you, but Free Ticket Fridays is happening. I hope you'll join us.
Matinair on air, weekday mornings 9 to 11.
You're listening to pre-recorded content.
Welcome back to the Best of Mornings with Pat Kreitlow on this Independence Day morning. Can I talk to you first about podcast platforms? And then we're going to hear more about the summer session for the Wisconsin Public Education Network. But first, about those podcast platforms. Yes, this is a radio show here on Civic Media, a network of radio stations. So first and foremost, it'd be awesome to have you as a radio listener. Radio is live and local and portable and awesome. But in this day and age, it is not the only platform available. So having said that, I can't tell you the last time I read the New York Times by unfolding a print version and getting ink on my fingers. You know, print is their first platform, but they make money off me through their digital platform online. They make more money off me because I'm a subscriber rather than an occasional purchaser of a newspaper. You follow me? Similarly, radio has digital platforms, lots of them actually. And so one of those platforms is Spotify. But there's also Apple. And I get most of my podcasts through Apple, being part of the cult of Apple. But there are a whole lot of people, actually more people, who use Spotify. So if you can't listen to us live, we'd love it if you would take us along as a subscriber on Spotify. Doesn't mean you have to listen to us every day, but we're there if you want to catch a show that you might have missed or hear something again. You don't know how to spell Kreitlow? Search Wisconsin Mornings in Spotify and you'll find us there. We've got a couple of great guests to introduce now. Denise Gomer Hutchinson has been here before, and Lori Blakesley from the Green Bay Area School District Public Relations Director join us to talk about the Public Education Network's Summer Summit that is coming up in Green Bay. Denise and Lori, good morning. How are you?
Good morning.
Morning.
Nice to have you both here. Denise, let's start with the Summer Summit overall. We've talked about the Wisconsin Public Education Network many a time, the educators, the allies, the advocates, and now it's summer break. And I've been to the Summer Summit before. It moves to different cities all the time. It's just this great opportunity for educators and their allies. Tell us more about what the event typically does in the summertime.
Well, thanks, Pat. Yeah, it's the 11th annual Summer Summit. It's always held at a school, a public school district in the community that we go to. And this year we're going to be at Preble High School in Green Bay, which because of a referendum just has a brand new addition and upgrade. And it's going to be really wonderful to showcase. We love showcasing the great public schools that we go in when we go to the summit. And this year the theme is building community through thriving public schools. And that's really the message, because our public schools are serving over 800,000 kids a year all across the state of Wisconsin. And this is an opportunity to let advocates see a different school than the ones that they're individually advocating for. And it's also an opportunity to share what's working in our public schools, what's working for advocates of public schools in different parts of the state, and bring everybody together to have an opportunity to see that they're not alone.
And Lori, at an occasion like this, I think being held in Green Bay has to be rather special for you, not just for the tangible things, you know, like what a referendum has done in terms of facilities, but the intangible things like the ideas and the advocacy that Green Bay educators have been on the front lines fighting for.
Yeah, it's an opportunity for us to showcase our district. So it's very exciting. As Denise mentioned, the Preble renovations are absolutely stunning. And so it'll be exciting for people to be able to come in and see that, as well as we're going to have an opportunity to have a couple of sessions to showcase some of the work that we've been doing.
So let's talk a bit. We've mentioned this before in Green Bay, but Denise, voucher transparency is something that's been a real key theme, especially right now with the state budget debate still going on. It looks like it's going to go into overtime. There won't be a new state budget ready by next week as it is due. So, Denise, is it fair to say that we are still very much in the advocacy window of asking legislators to try to provide better transparency for how their tax dollars are being used for education?
Yes, it is. And it's really critical. Yesterday, I was in the Fox Valley for an event that a group of Fox Valley administrators did with the Fox Valley Advocates for Public Education to really tell the community and legislators the wonderful things that are happening in our public schools, but also the amazing things that won't happen in our public schools with a $0 increase to public school funding. And Green Bay took a big step this last year. The school board actually wrote a resolution and asked the mayor of Green Bay to put voucher transparency, meaning on the tax bill, how much are taxpayers paying for money that's going out of school districts, public school districts, and going to pay for private schools. And it's a big deal.
It is a big deal. And so, Lori, forgive any exasperation you hear in my voice. I think our listeners are used to hearing this by now. But it is exasperating. It is amazing, not in a good way, that it has taken this long for transparency about the cost of the so-called choice program to be reflected on local property tax bills. It is something that some legislators have been fighting against for years and years. So, Lori, to see in Green Bay so much discussion on it lead to a positive development in terms of transparency has to make you feel real good about the education and, frankly, taxpayer advocacy that you're seeing from your community members in the Green Bay area.
So I think for us, what really prompted the continuing to want to be able to do this is then the last budget, we saw a significant increase in the amounts that voucher payments were increased to. And so what this meant is that as a district where we have been very fiscally conservative, been very fiscally responsible, and we have been very fortunate that as we've gone to referendum, we've been able to do so without impacting the tax rates for our property taxpayers. But then instead, we end up having our levy going up significantly because of the fact of having that paying out for those voucher payments. And so it was important for us to be able to have a way to better explain to our property tax owners why the tax levy kept increasing when we kept saying that we weren't going to increase their tax rate with our referendums.
So to take it back now, Denise, to the Summer Summit itself, it's described as a three-day conference of sessions for administrators, community school coordinators, teachers, school staff, family engagement staff, nonprofit and community leaders, and funders, all interested in exploring the work of the community schools strategy across our state. And you mentioned earlier about building thriving communities. So people might be saying, well, why are you talking about this on the radio? Isn't this just another teacher conference? No, it's far from it.
Far from it. And the first day on the 23rd is the community schools conference. And those are a very specific designation of some schools across the state of Wisconsin that do a whole lot more community outreach. It's a separate conference from ours, but they're a partner of ours. And so their conference is the day before ours. And then we have a reception on that evening on the 23rd to kick things off. And then it starts at 8 o'clock on the morning of the 24th, where we will have the mayor of Green Bay doing a welcome along with the superintendent for the Green Bay Area Public Schools. And then we'll move right into sessions, really talking to people about how do you advocate on whatever level that you're comfortable with for our public schools and really, really for the kids in the state of Wisconsin.
And Lori, can you talk about that from a community-wide standpoint of the notion that this isn't just a theme for educators and for parents who have their kids in school, but how an entire community is strengthened, whether you have kids in school or not, an entire community is strengthened when you support public schools. Is that something that is, you know, still important to convey to folks across the state who may not necessarily have kids in school?
Oh, definitely. I think that what people don't realize is that our Northeast Wisconsin public schools are really the drivers of our economy here in Northeast Wisconsin. We know that our schools are very focused on not just preparing our students for college, but in Green Bay Public Schools, we are very committed to having students prepared to enter the workforce with industry certifications and high demand jobs. And so those things are critical to everybody in our community.
You can find out more about this at wisconsinnetwork.org/summit. So again, you don't have to know Wisconsin Public Education Network. You just have to know Wisconsin Network, wisconsinnetwork.org/summer, summit for the summer summit. And Denise, I see there is a tentative schedule at a glance on the website right now, but a lot of the specific breakout sessions are still being set up, that at least I don't see those in front of me. Can you talk just a bit more about the kinds of things that some of these breakout sessions might include and what might interest people?
Yes. For example, Lori and her colleagues in Howard Suamico are going to be doing a whole session on the value and importance of a leadership academy, of finding leaders throughout their community that want to come in and go through a series of classes and information and workshops and learn how to be advocates for in business and industry about how important our public schools are and what they do and offer, like Lori was talking about, to the economic development of our community. And in fact, Green Bay just graduated their first academy class on Monday night. And so people will hear all about that. There'll be sessions on really integrating all communities within your community. And so how do you reach out to different unique communities and show them that they're part of this big microcosm of public education?
And I don't think I mentioned the dates. Shame on me. That would be Wednesday, July 23rd and Thursday, July 24th. And it all begins with a welcoming reception. Folks from around the state will gather. There will be some door prizes and special guests. And Lori, you seem to have a place that lends itself well to these welcoming receptions. What's the name of that? Oh, Lambeau Field. You've got a pretty good place to welcome people there, Lori.
That we do. We're just getting over our, you know, the excitement of having the NFL draft here. So Green Bay is an awesome place to come. Lots to do. So hope many people from across the state will consider joining us for this event.
Okay. And then one more time to learn more about it, head over to wisconsinnetwork.org/summit. Denise, did I hit all the high points? Was there anything we missed on what people need to know about the summer summit?
It's you get breakfast, you get lunch, you get interactions with a whole lot of people all over the state, and great sessions, and all for $40. And so you get to come to a really wonderful part of the state of Wisconsin.
Yes,
and you get to learn how important it is, even if you don't have kids, to be engaged in your public schools.
There's Denise Comer Hutchison from the Wisconsin Public Education Network. Lori Blakesley is the Public Relations Director for the Green Bay School District. Lori and Denise, thank you so much for your time today. Hope you have a great summit.
Thank you.
Let's pause right here. Back in just a moment. I'm Pat Kreitlow on the Civic Media Radio Network.
Wisconsin is summer weekends being spent on the lake. This is the Civic Media Radio Network.
No more mold. No more damage. No more slipping and hurting. Make your ordinary bathroom extraordinary for only $99 per month. New shower, new door, new tub, new wall, new anti-slip technology. BCI Bath and Shower is made in America for the highest quality. First 50 callers save $1,500 on a never-clear glass-treated door. BCI Bath and Shower. Interest-free financing options. 800-329-4115. 800-329-4115. 800-329-4115.
I'm Dan Schaefer. Let's recombobulate. Ever since I started the recombobulation area, I've written an in-depth breakdown of every new edition of the Marquette University Law School poll. The newest poll asks about a range of topics, whether Tony Evers should run for a third term, where people stand on Donald Trump's economic policies, and a host of issues relating to the state budget. The poll paints a picture of a polarized Wisconsin. Many people are very dug into their partisan camps, which is perhaps to be expected in the most evenly divided state in the nation. But there are a number of issues polled that do have the support of more than two-thirds of Wisconsin voters. Those include extending Medicaid coverage for new moms, legalizing marijuana, making major increases in state aid for special education, providing mental health services in schools, allowing citizen-led ballot initiatives, and banning cell phones in schools. What do most of these issues have in common? They are policies being advanced by Democrats in Wisconsin.
Find all of Dan's work at the Recombobulation Area.
You're listening to the American Democracy Minute, keeping your government by and for the people. Thomas Jefferson is credited with most of the text of the Declaration of Independence, but the independence part came from a Virginian named Richard Henry Lee on June 7, 1776. The First Continental Congress sent a list of grievances in 1774 to King George III, among them the loss of their rights under English law, the occupation by British forces in peacetime, and the oppressive coercive acts passed by Parliament to shut down colonial unrest. The King and Parliament didn't respond other than to pass more restrictive laws. By mid-May 1776, eight colonies supported independence, including Virginia, which directed its delegates to support independence at the Second Continental Congress. Virginia delegate Richard Henry Lee on June 7th presented his resolution for independence to the Congress in Philadelphia, which tabled action until July 2nd. In the interim, Thomas Jefferson, with light editing by Benjamin Franklin and John Adams, crafted a statement which would become the Declaration of Independence, which included Richard Henry Lee's independence resolution word for word. Resolved that these united colonies are and of right ought to be free and independent states, that they are absolved from all allegiance to the British crown, and that all political connection between them and the state of Great Britain is and ought to be totally dissolved. Read the full Declaration of Independence at AmericanDemocracyMinute.org. I'm Brian Beal.
Reach, engage, grow with Civic Media. Log on civicmedia.us/advertise.
You're listening to pre-recorded content.
Hey, welcome back. Another reminder that this is our free Ticket Friday giveaway for Milwaukee Brewers tickets. Four tickets to a game next Friday against the Washington Nationals. These are great seats. So if you can go to the game next Friday night, you should enter this. Get that Civic Media app. Use the text feature for one of the stations. You can use any of them. It's a statewide giveaway, so one of the Wisconsin stations here. You text us the keyword. We'll do this multiple times through the course of the day, and we'll pick one at random statewide. All you got to do is get that Civic Media app and text us the word HOLIDAY, H-O-L-I-D-A-Y. Text HOLIDAY to us before 9 o'clock, before the end of the show, and you will be in the running for those Brewers tickets on a free Ticket Friday. And remember, of course, you can hear the Brewers in Miami throughout the course of the weekend on several Civic Media stations. Head over to the Civic Media website for more. All right, what we're going to hear next is a bit of a mashup, two different segments about the congressman from Western Wisconsin. Okay, I have asked this question on the program before, and I'm going to keep asking this question. I'm going to keep asking this question until we get a satisfactory answer. Does anyone else have control over Congressman Derek Van Orden's social media passwords besides him? But the notion that a member of Congress can spend so much time online just hurling insults and criticizing his constituents or worse indicates to me he either doesn't have much to do or he just doesn't want to do any actual work. Recently, a woman from Stevens Point put a sarcastic comment under one of his posts, which, by the way, Congressman, that comes with the territory. Put on your big boy pants and absorb a few hits in the comment section. But no, Van Orden had to go in and respond with a screenshot of her current employment. Something to note here. If you click on this woman's Facebook page where she made the comment, there is no employment listed. So assuming she didn't change that recently, it means Congressman Van Orden had to take the time to look up a constituent of his. Online stalking, basically, for a man in his position, so that he could name and shame her for taking the time to put up a critical comment to one of his posts on social media. That's a congressman doing these things. A former Navy SEAL, the guy who said he was going to be an independent voice. You hear that all the time. I'm going to be an independent voice. And he was going to be it for veterans and stand up against budget cuts. We have heard him quite literally yelling, almost screaming at people that the cuts that are being planned for the VA, the cuts that are being planned for SNAP, nutritional assistance, that these things aren't going to hurt real people, that it's only going to be cutting the waste. It just seems that after stiff-arming constituents and refusing to hold town halls, the only voice he's listening to is the guy in the White House, the one that wants to make massive cuts to the VA. So it wasn't a big surprise to hear Van Orden trot out the bureaucracy boogeyman in his latest promise that the VA cuts would be all about bureaucrats and not the quality of veterans' health care. Here's a quick clip of Derek Van Orden. He was talking at the time to Veterans Affairs Secretary Doug Collins, a former Republican congressman from Georgia and himself a U.S. Air Force veteran. What you're going to hear Van Orden talking about is a hand-drawn graph that he made that purports to show that the number of doctors has stayed steady, the number of bureaucrats has gone up. Again, this is a hand-drawn graph with his assertion of what's happening at the VA. Let's give a listen.
That's the whole VA. This is the problem with the VA. Okay? This is the increase in bureaucrats. These are the doctors. It's almost a flat line. And then we have an increase with the veterans because of the PAC Act, right? So when we are going to cut the VA, and I hope you do, sir, this is where you need to make the cut, right there, in this line, right there, sir. If, Mr. Secretary, if you cut this, then this line with the doctors and stuff, the people that are actually touching our veterans and providing care can go like this, right? And then we can match the increase with vets. So, Mr. Secretary, I'm incredibly happy and looking forward to working with you and your administration.
When you cut the VA, and I hope you do, Derek Van Orden's words that you are going to hear on a loop, and he is going to lose his mind every time and say, that's not what I meant, yeah, that it was always about cutting the bureaucracy. The so-called bureaucracy we've been hearing all about since Elon Musk and Donald Trump showed up in D.C. in terms of just how radical this would be and how many people would be hurt when they say they're hurting bureaucrats. They're hurting people who may not have MD after their name, but very much play a role in making sure that the VA runs smoothly, that there is efficiency there, that veterans are seen in a timely manner there. You can't simply cut all of the support staff in something and expect that it will still run normally. Because what you're doing then is, and I'm taking a big leap here in hyperbole, but understand where I'm going here. We're not asking doctors to start scrubbing the toilets as well, okay? And when you you think, well, I'm cutting this one janitorial position and I'm cutting this one assistant director position. Those positions were there for a reason, and they weren't there just because, you know, George needs a job, so we're going to create a position, and then every VA hospital is going to have it. Government runs best with people who are engaged in the notion of public service. Government should be the people you should trust least are the people who hate government the most, who say, oh, it's all about waste, fraud, abuse, and bureaucrats, because they can never seem to produce it. Remember, Elon Musk's Doge thing was all about finding the waste, fraud, and abuse. Waste, fraud, and abuse can be against the law in this country. And yet I haven't seen anybody brought up on charges yet. Have you? Because that would be where you would prove the waste, where you would prove the fraud, where you would prove the abuse. And it seems to be lacking, which is why you see this kind of misdirection from somebody like Derek Van Orden. More to come after the news from up here on Lake Wissota. I'm Pat Kreitlow. You're up north, and this is the Civic Media Radio Network.
This is News from the Center, 1450 AM WRCE and 107.7 FM W299 CD Richland Center. And always on the Civic Media app.
ABC News, I'm Sherry Preston. President Trump will sign his big budget bill later today. Republicans in the House giving him the votes he needed to get it passed. A series of fireworks explosions across the country in the run-up to the 4th of July weekend in one Los Angeles neighborhood. 100 firefighters battled flames sparked by active fireworks stored in a garage. Firefighter David Ortiz says it spread to several other homes.
We have one person that was injured with significant injuries, was transported in critical condition, stable but critical condition due to the seriousness of her injuries. She's in her mid-30s.
In Ukraine, one of Russia's largest drone and missile strikes of the war. Several neighborhoods on fire in Kyiv and word of multiple injuries. The bombings coming hours after President Trump held a call with Russian President Vladimir Putin. A strike by air traffic controllers in France disrupting travel at all Paris airports. Thousands of passengers rearranging plans.